A wave of fear fanned out among the Empire's hierarchy. It was impossible to tell who was in his melee. Now, visitors, judges, and local officials had to travel surrounded by bodyguards. Bitter divisions sprang up within the hierarchy, as some argued for a hard-line approach to Hassan, while others preached accommodation as the only answer. Meanwhile, as the Empire struggled to somehow repress the Ismailis, the killings went on. There was no real rhyme or reason to when it happened, or which high administrator was singled out. Officials would talk endlessly about a pattern, analyzing every Ismaili move. Without their realizing it, this little sect had come to dominate their thoughts. By 1120, Sanjar, the new sultan, decided to take action, planning a military campaign to capture the Ismaili castles with overwhelming force and turn the region around them into an armed camp. As preparations for the war got underway, Hassan e Sabah sent ambassador after ambassador to Sanjar, offering to negotiate an end to the killings. They were all turned away. The tables seemed to have turned. Now it was the Ismailis who were frightened. Shortly before the campaign was to be launched, the Sultan awoke one morning to find a dagger thrust neatly in the ground, a few feet away from the position where his breast lay on the bed. How did it get there? What did it mean? The more he thought about it, the more he began to literally tremble with fear. It was clearly a message. He told no one about this, for whom could he trust? Even his wives were suspect. By the end of the day, he was an emotional wreck. That evening, he received a message from Hassan himself. "Did I not wish the Sultan well? That dagger which was struck into the hard ground would have been planted in his soft breast." Sanjar had had enough. He was not willing to live in constant fear, his mind deranged by uncertainty and suspicion. It was better, he thought, to negotiate with this demon. He called off his campaign and made peace with Hassan. Over the years, as the Ismailis' political power grew and the sect expanded into Syria, its killers became almost mythic. The assassins had never tried to escape. Their killing done, they were caught, tortured, and executed to a man. But new ones kept on coming, and nothing seemed to deter them from completing their task. They seemed possessed, utterly devoted to their cause. Some called them Hashashin, from the Arabic word hashish, because they acted as if they were drugged. European crusaders to the Holy Land heard stories about these devilish Hashashin and passed them on, the word slowly transforming into assassins, passing forever into the language. Interpretation. We are all extremely susceptible to the emotions of those around us. It is often hard for us to perceive how deeply we are affected by the moods that can pass through a group. This is what makes the use of terror so effective and so dangerous. With a few well-timed acts of violence, a handful of assassins can spark all kinds of corrosive thoughts and uncertainties. The weakest members of the target group will succumb to the greatest fear, spreading rumors and anxieties that slowly overcome the rest. The strong may respond angrily and violently to the terror campaign, but that only shows how influenced they are by the panic. They are reacting rather than strategizing, a sign of weakness, not strength. As the public's imagination runs wild, the assassins become something much larger, seeming omnipotent and omnipresent. As Hassan proved, a handful of terrorists can hold an entire empire hostage with a few well-calibrated blows against the group's psyche. And once the group's leaders succumb to the emotional pull, whether by surrendering or launching an unstrategic counterattack, the success of the terror campaign is complete.